Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World episode 153. I'm your host, John Jordan. Don't forget to check out my daily email about blockchain gaming. You can find that at gamestx.substack.com. In this episode, I'm talking to David Amore, who is the CEO of Playmint Studios, a UK-based studio that is in Brighton. I've known David for a long, long time. He used to be making PlayStation games back in the day, then moved to mobile, and then over the last couple of years has formed Playmint and has been working on blockchain games. And not only do I like talking to David because he's a lovely guy, I like talking to David because he thinks quite seriously about games. And in the process of the last sort of 2 years, it's been fascinating to watch his journey as someone who's sort of really fallen very deeply down the blockchain rabbit hole, as we like to say, and is now really in the vanguard of this sort of new trend we see for people making fully on-chain games, that is, games where the entire game runs on the blockchain. So we talk quite a bit about that trend, which I think really kicked off in 2023, his thinking around why you might want to make those sort of games. That's not the sort of games most people are making when it comes to blockchain. And we talk also about David's particular project, or Playmint's particular game, which is called Downstream, and the way they're sort of thinking around, you know, that game and the sort of some of the difficulties and some of the challenges that they're still to overcome, but why they think that is a process really worth doing, and why they think this is, they're making a game that you couldn't make any other way. I really enjoyed the episode. I hope you do too. Don't forget to subscribe and see you next time. Hello and welcome to the podcast. And today we have, very pleased, David Amore, who's been out in windy Brighton by the looks of things. Your hair is...
It's pretty windy. Yeah, I've been on the seafront this morning.
Fashionable quiff there. And David should be no stranger to podcast listeners, proper OG podcast listeners, as we would say, because David's been on twice before, as we've just been talking about. So David was on our end of year for last year and the year before, 2021-2022. But I sort of realised, even during those podcasts, I realised you were never really talking about your project, which I think is very interesting. And that's what we're going to talk about today. But before we get into that, let's have a little potted history. It's always good to have a potted history, even if you've been on the podcast before, about your
sure.
history in games.
Okay, well, you know, you talked about the fact that I've been on the podcast with you a couple of times before. That's true, but we could go back a couple more decades further than that, John, couldn't we? So, I mean, yeah, long-time video game developer, Electronic Arts, and then ran PlayStation companies, then mobile companies. So I like sort of jumping around where interesting things are going on. A couple of years ago, really interested in the idea of what happens if you combine blockchain and games, and sort of decided to build a company around that idea. And quite shortly, we decided that it would be interesting to, is it possible, and why would you build a game that exclusively ran on a blockchain? So we sort of early on committed to this idea of fully on-chain games. And, you know, we're a studio based in Brighton. There's 12 of us. A couple of years into that journey, as you say.
And it's sort of interesting because, I mean, you were someone who, as you said, we sort of knew each other before. But we started talking in 2021. So I guess there's not many people I know in the space who have sort of, I know a little bit more of your backstory because we had a lot of discussions about it in early 2021. And I find the fascinating thing with you is, as you sort of said yourself, hopefully I paraphrase correctly, is you sort of came at this new sort of industry quite enthusiastic about it, but sort of like, I'll take all the great knowledge I've had over the last 20 years and make this fantastic blockchain game and show everyone what it's about. And really, I think for the first year that we spoke about stuff, the process was actually you having to unlearn a lot of things and relearn a lot of things. And every time I spoke to you, I sort of realized you were getting sort of more hardcore about the sort of really deep sort of decentralization in blockchain, which is definitely not what we were talking about. And that wasn't my view either when we started talking. So it's interesting. And now I sort of feel a little bit like, you know, I sort of follow you down this sort of rabbit hole of fully on-chain game, because we never used the term fully on-chain gaming. That's a fairly new sort of term, isn't it? So,
yeah.
I mean, can you unpick a little bit of how you sort of that sort of change of emphasis sort of happened?
Yeah, you're right. I think when we started up, or at least when we were talking about starting up, like, should we do this? We build a company around this idea. Then I think it was prior to Axie, but like that was the most obvious use case, that kind of, oh, I wonder if we can financialize aspects of the game by, you know, and And then it's quite easy to look at what you've been doing previously and think, oh, well, how could you take what we were doing previously, like 6 months ago, but then use some of these ideas with that? But I made a mistake once before when I tried to move from PlayStation 3 to mobile phone. And the mistake I made was that I just tried to adapt things that worked for PlayStation 3 into an iPhone and just expected everybody to love it. But of course, you've really got to, try and figure out what it's quite hard to see things that don't exist yet and, yes, and imagine those things. But what are all the affordances now that we're building games around blockchain? Sure, we can just financialize game assets. That's one thing we can do. We can do things with DAOs, but that's probably not everything. And how far does this decentralization path rabbit hole go down? And I think we were quite keen to go deeper than most people were at that point and think, I don't know, maybe say, where does this end up rather than what is it, everything that's going on today? And it's hard because nobody's there and there's not much infrastructure for it and there's not much of a market for that. So it's a lot of them, figuring out new stuff. It's slower and a few wrong turns, but it's certainly intellectually more interesting. And there's a bunch of new ideas that it leads to, I think.
And it sort of, maybe I overuse the term, but it does strike me very much as sort of the innovator's dilemma, that game makers in general get very good at a certain type of making, a certain type of game they make, or a certain platform or whatever, and they, they really know how all the widgets work, and they can really optimize every single thing. I mean, the mobile is a particular sort of case where, just the UA channels they had were incredible, and that was a lot of the success of the game. But you sort of get so far down that sort of focus that actually that knowledge you have is really, maybe some of it is sort of applicable, but most of that knowledge is that makes you really efficient and brilliant at what you do is almost antithetical to
success. It's a hindrance, and you have to unlearn some of that stuff, and you sort of want to, you don't do it consciously, but you end up playing into your comfort zone. I know how to do this game, so I'll make this kind of game. And if you look at, this is a blockchain conversation, but if you look at what mobile games ultimately became, they were nothing like a PlayStation game. But it was just quite hard to imagine that, and all of your muscle memory is making PlayStation games, so whether you mean to or not, you end up making one a bit it looks a bit like a PlayStation game. So this time I think we try to be a bit more disciplined and quickly said, let's try and build something that embraces these new ideas that we couldn't have done before.
And I guess what we'll be talking about, I have a bit of a mental block here. It is downstream, isn't it? I was thinking in my head, is it upstream or down? But obviously, logically, it's downstream. Perhaps we'll talk. it's not a term just bought out of the ether, is it? It has a meaning to it. But anyway, what's interesting about it is it's a fully on-chain game, a term we've used sort of a couple of times already. But certainly, I think one of the interesting underlying trends of last year was you started to see first, I think an intellectual sort of grouping of people who this was what they were interested in. And then that's sort of now sort of become a bit more of a sort of solid community doing things. I still think you're interesting in that space because you're probably the only one who has experience of making games before on a sort of professional level. It tends to be a very sort of hobbyist crypto sort of, slightly mad programmer community. Yeah. So have you found that emerging sort of?
Yeah, I'm definitely the old man in the room at these conferences about fully on-chain games.
Well, you and me, but yeah.
But I mean, it's pretty thrilling to, and I really don't over, I do think there's some value in experience, but it's really not everything. So for me, it's thrilling to go to an event. We had one in November, I think, at Dev Connect in Istanbul, where there was an event exclusively for fully on-chain games. And oh my goodness, the people there were just the brightest minds with, really sharp ideas. No, for better or worse, not a lot of talk about tokens and financialization. It's philosophical ideas and technical approaches. And where does this take us? Really, really fascinating with people way smarter than me. So it's, and to your point, right, it's I think with the last time we did that event, it felt like there was about a dozen of us that were at this event, and this was 500, and obviously not everybody building fully on-chain games was there. So as metrics go, that's one. So there's a lot of lot more people building in the space than there was. I think it's like an interesting idea. And also, I think when we started, there was a question, is this even technically possible? Can you even run a game exclusively on a blockchain? Never mind, why would you? But let's start with, could you? And I think what I've noticed in the last 18 months is the answer to that is basically yes. Like I think a combination of some technical tricks that we've learned as you know, in making fully on-chain games, combined with improving infrastructure, means some things that we were worried might not be possible are possible. So those things are going away, and we're spending more time talking about the game and more time talking about the ideas, where it takes us, you know.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, more broadly, that was a sort of underlying trend in 2023, was this sort of, people have been talking about L2s for a long time, obviously with Ethereum being not a place that you want to run stuff. But then you sort of had L3s now, and obviously you had stuff like Arbitrum and Optimism and Base as being sort of fairly robust ecosystems that people were moving to. And now sort of every blockchain game is sort of thinking about that sort of thing. So sort of that's sort of the fully on-chain game sort of plays into that. That's sort of a wave that is sort of being you're being carried away on. So
yeah, and it's useful. I've started to do this rather arrogantly, just say, you're all smart people. I'm sure the technical problems that are ahead of us are all going to be solved, or at least solved to a degree that we can make the game that we want to make. They're not all solved, so that's the arrogant part. But you know, when I look at the rate that we're crossing these off, then I go, okay, it's going to take some work, but we'll get there. So let's spend our cycles talking about something else instead.
I'm totally untechnical, but I just remember, you know, very much when people start talking about L2s, and everyone's going to use Optimism because that's obviously, you know, technically much easier, and it's not, you know, not where we want to end up. But that, you know, these ZK rollup things are just like, they're like 10 years away, and then suddenly we're like, yeah, ZK rollup's going live. I mean, I know ZK rollups aren't sort of properly live yet in for games, but they, you know, that's in months rather than years, isn't it? So it can be surprising how some of these things can be solved quite quickly. Cool. Now, I do want to talk about Downstream, because I would say I've sort of, you know, you've been quite open about it, and it has its own sort of a X account, as I guess as we call it now. But tell us about Downstream, because Downstream is interesting as a fully on-chain game from people who have made, you know, lots of games before. And I think that is your, you know, your a key advantage you guys have in this space. You have made games before that millions of people have played, and that that is experience that is useful.
So. Yeah, I suppose so. Yes, it is. So Downstream is a persistent world. It's a top-down view looking in on a game world. And I'll give you the story of the game. An AI has accidentally caused the singularity and sort of exploded our human world, and is apologetically is trying to rebuild it. And you're sort of assisting in that and trying to make things that work in this world. From a gameplay point of view, it's sort of standard MMO patterns. You're moving around the map. There's other players there. You're trading with them. You're building things together, fighting things, competing with each other. I think there's so that's sort of the gameplay, and we have sort of quests in the game that you can go on. It's still pre-alpha, so it's not done, and we're still figuring things out. But maybe that gives an overall flavor. And by the way, I mean, as you say, we're pretty open. So we do play tests, and there's videos, and, you know, we're building in the open. So in fact, everything's open source. So if you wanted to, you could compile it yourself. But a couple of things that we think are interesting by making it fully on chain. One is this idea of a godless game. So the way I describe this is that ordinarily, and we built these games before, if you build an MMO or any kind of game world, then you have the game world, and then you have the owner and operator. So World of Warcraft has an owner-operator of Blizzard that is going to be creating content, is going to be balancing the economy, is going to be banning players. Is, you know, that's live operating that world. But with a fully decentralized game, you can create something that lives forever on a blockchain that isn't owned by anybody. So imagine that we create this world, set the rules in place, and then sort of cut the umbilical cord. Yeah. Now, that world of Hexwood, which is where the game is going to be is going to be still there after I'm dead. It's going to be running on an Ethereum blockchain indefinitely. And because I've cut that umbilical cord, then I can't control what gets built in that world. And I think there's something, and we built it in a way that encourages people to extend the game, extend the functionality, put new things in that world. And I think that as a as an idea, there's something quite interesting about the fact that this world lives forever and players can permissionlessly extend it to add new things. So sure, we'll be creating things in this world that we hope people play and spend money on, but equally there's nothing stopping you or anybody else adding content to that world. And what the what the game ends up being is whatever players want to play and want to build. And that's just, it's very different from how we would approach game development ordinarily. I don't truly know where that takes us. And in a way, that's the an interesting part, both in terms of what this game ends up looking like, but also what people do in it. You know, people could create terrible things in this world that I have no control to stop them. You know, put a gun to my head. There's nothing we can do. And you know, I think that's a, you know, a persistent, permissionless world where through composability, which is this idea of code connecting with other bits of code, then you can, anybody can extend what the game is. So a bit of a rambling version of of Downstream, but that's Downstream and a couple of key ideas within it.
And I guess it's sort of, there's two things there. I guess one fundamental question that people ask is, Why is this game sort of does this make a better sort of game? And if it doesn't, does that matter? Because I guess a lot of things we get for blockchain is people are saying, well, most of these blockchain games, you don't need blockchain, you know, which is in a sense technically sometimes the case. But obviously, we would sort of maybe argue even for some very Web 2.1 games that there is this sort of meme, or there is this sort of concept of around ownership, even if it's not implemented in the product itself, it has a sort of maybe halo effect. Whereas you're doing, you know, you're going 100%
on the box. I guess it's two things. Like, one is it technically possible to do without a blockchain? I don't think you could do this.
No, not really.
There's another one which is, does anyone care? Like, you know, I think that's a reasonable. It's not like we have armies of people queuing up. We're still building it, but the point is, you know, to me that's an interesting idea, a sort of a world that lives forever that isn't owned by anybody, a godless world. And that you can
Are you thinking of using that? Is that you're going to be, because obviously we had, you worked on God Games, that was the whole Peter Molyneux thing, so, there would be a narrative arc with you coming back and releasing
the
first godless game. That could work quite well.
I do think that, you know, there's a term we use, which, you know, what are the affordances of a fully on-chain game? Other people are building games that you can think of it as an arcade game that that will be there with the same rules that can never be turned off. So it's a simple game, can't turn it off because it runs on a blockchain, and the rules can't change because it's they're contracts that can't be upgraded. And now, you know, that's an interesting affordance of a fully on-chain game. It's one that lives forever with a set of rules. If you get a high score, it's going to be there forever. So in this fully on-chain games community, there's lots of people trying out different ideas that I think only possible if you sort of commit to fully on chain, which has, you know, a bunch of technical headaches around it, and and frankly, it's easier to copy what other people are doing in games than it is to build something new. The way I describe this is normally, if I'm building a game of any kind, a PlayStation game, a mobile game, PC game, it's 80% old game, 20% new game, and by that I mean I know how I'm going to build the graphics, how I'm going to monetize it, how I'm going to market it, what the game mechanics are. And sure, it will feel like a new game, but actually I'm sort of standing on the shoulders of giants, either because we've built those kind of games before, we can see how other people have built them. Here it's like, you know, 40% the whole game, 60%. So it's hard. It's but
more than that, I think. Was it Ben Gordon always had a thing at EA when he was at EA? Is it like a third of the game is exactly the same, a third of it is sort of slightly, you know, reskinned.
Oh, there we go. A third of it. Bing and I broadly agree on that point. So, I mean, to be clear, we're still using Unity. So we're using Unity as a front end, but of course the back end is just a set of smart contracts, and then you have to work out how you make them.
And presumably, if someone wanted to make an Unreal 5 version of it, they could do so.
Good. You understand. So that's right. So it's really the server component of the game, and it is all server component. The brains of the game is just running on a blockchain. All we do in the client, which runs in a browser, is just provide an interface to that world. But yeah, as you say, somebody else could create a mobile version or an Unreal version. So, you know, that is the other thing is you don't have to think about the whole, a whole new client. It could just be some aspect of the game that's available in a mobile app that connects to the blockchain. So the point is it's sort of an open, it's a completely open interface to the brains of the game.
You could just have, like pull the data from it and have a marketplace app.
And already we're seeing people build, you know, some things that show up in our client and other things which are an interface to some other aspect of the game that is in another browser tab somewhere.
I mean, is that, obviously you're sort of thinking about the experience that you're making, but is sort of part of making it also to start seeding this sort of a community around that, or at least, you know, people who are not paid for by you who are going to be tinkering?
I mean, that's, I think it becomes interesting if it's a godless game, but the only people that are adding any content is us, then it's godless in name only, really. So I think it becomes interesting when people are building new things that upset people and hate them and surprise them, including us, right? So, you know, I think that's the goal. We've had groups of people build interesting things. So we know that it's technically possible. I think we need to... We've proven to ourselves that it's technically possible because we've had surprises being built within the game. But now we just need to build more of the game.
And in terms of, you know, obviously you're going to some degree, you're going to go through a sort of traditional process. I suppose you're going to go for, you know, pre-alpha to alpha, and then probably, you know, get people into some sort of closed beta alpha, whatever. And then at some point, early access. And then at some point they'll say, this is finished. But obviously for this sort of game, not finished, but, you know, this is whatever, version 1.0. But then obviously, clearly the big thing for this game is, at what point is the cord cut? And I imagine that is, you know, obviously...
At what stage is the... Can you repeat the...
The cord is cut. So basically...
Oh, yes.
Because that's sort of like, you know, obviously that's, you know, to a degree going to be part of the narrative of this game is exciting because the cord's going to be cut. But equally, that's the point at which a whole bunch of, you know, things are... You know, immediately as soon as you do that, there's going to be something really important that you've realized you should have done, because that's sort of the point of human psychology. So how much thinking have you done around that process?
A few things to say about that. One is that, I mean, you know, without talking too much about our production process, just because it's boring, but, you know, I think it's a mistake to just say, okay, here's where we're going to get to. This is the fully featured version of Downstream. And, you know, we're going to retreat into our cave and build that for the next 3 years. And I'll let you know when there's something to play. That's like, that's a precarious way to run a startup. You know, that isn't a startup in DNA. So I think what we're trying to do, and we've done one of these already, is our first game, The Crypt, which is just to try out ideas or do technical things, find out a little bit about the market. So I think in practice it means that we're going to be sort of testing things out along the way that aren't the full game. And I think it is important to hold ourselves to this idea of a godless version, and I don't think that's a priority today. So I do think it's an important differentiating point about what we're doing, but I don't think it's a 2024 thing, just to be candid about that. But then we do talk about it a lot, and I think that there's this tension between, oh, that sounds great, but when was the last time you released a game and didn't have to do a patch afterwards, right? So Nice in theory, but you're delivering a game and setting all the rules in stone, but the first thing someone's going to do is find an exploit to that rule, and now what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And that's realistic, and I think it would take 10 attempts probably for us to get that stuff right. I think what would our approach is, if, as I say, the world is called Hexwood in the game, in Downstream. And we'll create a version of Hexwood, cut the cord, and then someone will find an exploit in it and prove that, you know, and it'll be clear that it's a failed world or something. I don't know how to phrase that. I think the right way of doing it is saying, not upgrading Hexwood, but say, okay, see what you mean? Yes. All right, we're going to create a Hexwood 2. Anybody that wants to move to Hexwood 2, Hexwood 1 is still there, you know, and will always be as Hexwood 1 is. Hexwood 2 is available to for anybody that wants to avoid that problem that is being exploited. And I think that's a more credible way. That's how to solve that problem, I think. But it's theory rather than practice because we haven't done it yet.
No, and it is interesting because it does sort of create a whole or tie into a whole bunch of sort of blockchain sort of consensus mechanics around sort of obviously forks have been a massive thing in the past for sort of Bitcoin, and we've sort of seen that sort of, you know, it's worked in the sense that Bitcoin, the main Bitcoin, is the one that has value, but I don't know, there are still people who love Bitcoin Cash or Bitcoin SV, and so the community has broken off. So, you know, that's a sort of a model of
That's what happened with Ethereum. My memory serves right. There was a fork, and people decided, I'm happy with this new Ethereum, which is the one that, the path that we're on. And some people hung back, and it's still there, as best I know. But people vote with their feet, and so that feels like a better way to achieve that.
But then, is there still a finite decision that has to be? Maybe it's less finite than it would, you know, classically be. But at some point, Hexwood 17 you finally go, this is the one, you know, or do you, you know, or does do you get to Hexwood 73 and most people are still playing Hexwood 69 or something? I don't know. Are you actually not making that decision, you know, you're sort of actually parking that in sort of impracticality by
I mean, so there's some, we know how we could do it. Truthfully, I don't know the answer to the question you're, I mean, and that's one of the fun things to try and work out. What's going to happen? How would it work? Would we even create Hexwood? Like what happens if somebody creates a, we create Hexwood 1, Hexwood 2, but somebody else creates a Hexwood Alpha that hasn't, because it's only a set of smart contracts. And then do people move that? Or what happens to the Lindy effect? Do people stick with? Don't know. But like, you know, when I say that this is an intellectually interesting thing to try and build, it's those kind of things. Nobody's done it before. Nobody's answered those questions. Nobody really knows what will happen. And I think that's interesting to build, but also interesting to play. Like, this is, if you're, I think that if you're playing one of those games, you have a slightly different relationship with the game because you think, well, this is our game. It's not Playman's game. Sure, they created the world, but they can't. It's ours now, and we'll decide how it's run from the inside, not from God on the outside striking us down with lightning. So I think, you know, you have this phrase, don't you? But I think probably feature, not bug.
No, absolutely. I mean, and I do just think, I guess you do too, that you know, in this sort of process, these sort of things that you're grappling with now are sort of things that even... say use the term sort of web sort of 3.1 games that are very light blockchain at the moment, if they're successful at some point in their lifespan, they're going to have to deal with these sort of things, even if they're not sort of embedded into their DNA like you've embedded this into yours. You know, and maybe something, obviously people have DAOs and Axie say we're going to decentralize at some point, you know, in the future, but effectively all blockchain games are going to be going down this route because the players own the stuff, you know, and
here's an analogy I use, which is that, you know, the human world that we live in has no, if there's a god, then it's a god with a light touch, right? If you do something, and I need to find a better example this year, but let's say that you decide, John, that you're going to set up a Nazi memorabilia shop in the central town. Now there's no external There's nothing in our world's physics that stops you doing that. There is no God that strikes you down and says, what are you doing, John? You're not allowed to do that. Yeah. But of course, there's an in-world reaction. There's police and there's mob rule. And that to me is interesting, being governed from the inside rather than being governed by some sort of appointed God on the outside. And then maybe people decide that the Nazi memorabilia shop should stay. And maybe there's two factions of people that draw battle lines. But the fact that there is no blizzard outside saying, yes, under the terms of this agreement, you don't get to put these Nazis. Mm. So I don't know exactly where that path leads, but the idea that it's sort of owned and operated by the people within the world is fascinating to me.
Yeah. And I guess the interesting thing is you do sort of have some control over that in terms of how you make the game, because that sort of attracts the community that you sort of want. So I guess you actually, the advantage of a fully on-chain game that has that baked in is that's going to sort of attract the community of people who sort of understand that at a deeper level than people who aped into a NFT drop and want the number to go up. I mean, hopefully number go up is always a thing, but hopefully the nuance of understanding is at least been, there's an education process going on there, I suppose.
It's quite I spend my time in this autonomous world, fully on-chain game community. And I think it has forked from hybrid, what are you calling them? Hybrid games, ones that which you're using. And so both in terms of an audience and also a set of people building. So I must say I'm less connected with some of the other blockchain stuff than I used to, because this is quite a separate group of people trying to tackle some of these ideas.
And have you sort of more generally sort of found the space? Obviously, we had, I guess, in 2021, we had this sort of quite strong backlash from self-imported gamers who thought that they were going to set some rules for us. That seems to have died down a bit. Do you think the other game makers you talk to and see what you're doing are a bit more interested and seeing this as a bit less of a sort of a weird sort of money grab and all that sort of stuff, or is that still
enough? We're doing something that I can have and I've done this. I had spoken to some friends that are at Epic or something, and I explain as I've just done with you, talking about what we're doing, why I find it interesting, and that I don't think they're just being nice. I think that you have an intellectually interesting conversation about some of these ideas, and it feels a long way from Ponzinomics. So I think that I worry less about the credibility of that than I used to. I think the thing that I worry more about is nobody has product market fit, really. The last games that I was working on had 350 million downloads. They were mobile games. Here, I'm happy if 100 people are playing something that we're building. Blockchain, particularly fully on-chain games, is a bit of an echo chamber, and we need to hold ourselves to a higher standard. Is that what I'm trying to say? But, let's be honest, we're not creating. I can talk about amazing things that seem interesting to me, but I haven't built them yet, and also, people aren't knocking down the door saying, please, when can I play it? So I do think it's an interesting path to be in, but I think my biggest concern is that we're still not finding product market fit, either in fully on-chain games or to a lesser extent in hybrid games. Do you worry about that? Or do you think about that?
I don't worry about it. I do think sort of the cycle that we're in at the moment, which is already quite... what's the term? Over exuberance. How quickly the market can snap back into sort of crazy bull mode is, is that people are just sort of cycling through NFT drops and this new game comes out, and it's almost like when this new game is being announced, and it's almost when the game comes out, you sort of people just realize, oh, it's just a game with some NFTs. There's nothing magical about it. And I've often thought, and maybe this is sort of playing back into your discussion of product market fit, is maybe the most interesting thing about blockchain games in the long run will be that you allow lots of what would have been considered very niche games that wouldn't have really been economically viable to actually survive with much smaller dev teams, but the incredible sort of passion and the amount of money some of those people will spend to play your game or invest in your game, allow those things to you know, on a percentage basis, let's say, you know, be incredibly profitable, but they won't be scalable. So and right. Certainly with fully launched games at the moment, that's sort of that's the product market fit thing, is the scalability of it. But equally, I think some of those, what start out as quite niche games, over time, and as you know, maybe is that, as we discussed, maybe is that situation where other teams are building more, you know, easily accessible clients that have nothing to do with the original team, but they mm-hmm. in some way are then monetizing that. And then so suddenly, you know, you have something like, you know, maybe not a great analogy, but like, you know, a blockchain Minecraft or something, you know, a sort of a more platform thing that is mm-hmm. sort of cutting in different ways. And I get nervous about, worried is not the term, but we're onboarding the next billion people to blockchain or blockchain gaming or all that sort of stuff. It's just, I think that can be a very dangerous double-edged sword, because I don't think that's really, as you say, I mean, actually did it for a day, got to a million active wallets, and then the next day went straight back down again. that the numbers are meaningless.
For me, I think there's a collection of interesting ideas, and by the way, still finding interesting ideas. So I don't think that's finished, that I think can be applied to games. I talked about this godless and permissionless building and these kind of like example of a couple of ideas. And I'd like to see them applied to game. I think there's something interesting we can do with these that is, I don't quite know whether or not it's a new kind of game for a new kind of player, or whether or not it's just a new approach for existing games for existing audience. I don't know yet, but there's interesting ideas that haven't been fully realized in games yet.
Yeah. I do think, as we sort of come to a close, I do think that the more general games industry has sort of, you know, there's always new games that are coming out that are great and exciting. But as you go back to your, like, you know, what percentage of a game is new? You know, that maybe that 20% of a new you used to have is seems to be getting smaller and smaller. It seems to be, you know, there's a lot of sort of nice, you know, games that I can sort of look at graphics of or videos and go, oh, that'd be interesting to play. But the innovation now is almost ironic, because there's many more games out there than we ever had before, but certainly the sort of the ones, the sort of big games you're looking at, they're increasingly on a technical level, I think, and certainly on an imaginative level, not very interesting. And maybe the shock of something like blockchain, which really upsets all those sort of things, is something actually the industry needs. But I mean,
I phrase it as saying this is the most boring I've ever seen the games industry. There's usually something that comes along every 5 years that throws everything in the air. Oh, now you've got a mobile phone. Now you've got an internet connection. Now you've got 3D graphics. And then, we could do this. It leads to this kind of game and this kind of experience. And we haven't had one since mobile and what else? Maybe user-generated content, which feels like 12 years ago. Yeah. So this is, and as you said, I there's some incredible games. I'm not suggesting there's not great games, but we're not seeing the same amount of innovation as we have historically. Mm. And, you know, I'm hoping that blockchain can bring some new ideas and some new energy, some innovation to the games industry.
Yeah, cool. Good. And on that note, I will say thank you very much, David. That was really good. I enjoyed that. I very much like the godless game. We'll work on the memes on that, for sure.
Yeah, good. So I should probably do downstream.game is our sign up, just to do a little PR on that. But we building the open, so I'm pretty approachable. I love talking about this stuff. It's very interesting to me, so come and find me if you're interested.
Downstream.game is the place to go. You got a Twitter account, X account, Discord as well?
Yep, it's all going on. There. I mean, if you go to playmint.com or downstream.game, then you'll find your way.
You'll get there. Good. Yeah. Thank you very much to David, and thank you very much to you for watching, listening to the podcast, however you are consuming it. Every episode, we are talking to people who are building out this very interesting new way of playing games, and pleased to say we are starting 2024 in style. So we're trying to do a podcast a week. So you're actually my third podcast of the year so far.
Whoa.
I'm not quite sure when you're going to come out now. I've got another two booked in. So really going great guns. So crazy.
Perfect.
Going to be a big year. So don't forget to subscribe to keep up to date with what's going on. But thanks for watching this one.
Thanks, Sam.